Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help. You save. Price match applies to same item. Current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Previously in part one of this two-part series, we examine the case of the Treehouse murder in Key West, Florida. In November 2017, Matthew Bonnet, an eccentric juggler and street performer, was murdered on his property, a makeshift dwelling on Stock Island known as the Treehouse. The nickname came from the wooden platforms towering above his mobile home. That night, two masked men tried to rob Paula Belmont, a tenant who lived under a tarp on the upper deck of the Treehouse. Hearing the commotion, Matthew ran to help her, but was chased down and fatally stabbed. Paula recognized one of the attackers as Rory Detroit Wilson, who lived in a nearby warehouse. Police soon arrested Rory, along with Travis Johnson and Tyrone Tucker, two other men from the same warehouse. During interrogation, Travis confessed to being the getaway driver for Rory and Tyrone, with surveillance footage seeming to back up Travis's story. Investigators were confident they had solved the case. Tyrone, however, maintained his innocence, but his protests were completely ignored until an extraordinary twist brought an unexpected ally, a high school friend from 30 years earlier. Now a multi-millionaire. Join me now for part two of Treehouse Cinderella, the murder of Matthew Bonnet. You'll hear how this seemingly straightforward case against Tyrone Tucker began to unravel in a spectacular fashion, and how Tyrone, facing life in prison, made an extraordinary decision to serve as his own attorney at trial, taking on the full might of the state in a battle for his freedom. It was in the early morning hours of Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017, when 46-year-old murder suspect Tyrone Tucker was walking alone on the streets of Key West, Florida. He'd just been released from custody following a marathon-length police interrogation.
It was early in the morning, and I've been there all night. And they let me go. Not only did they let me go, the thing, bad part about that is they made me walk home. And I remember the directive was to check out the cameras, how many cameras there were.
Tyrone was one of three primary suspects in a homicide that had occurred 5 days earlier. During a robbery gone wrong, a man was stabbed to death and a woman's neck had been slashed. although she'd miraculously survived the attack. The detectives told Tyrone to count the surveillance cameras during his walk for one reason. They wanted him to know that anything he'd done on the night of the murder had likely been captured on video.
They think I had something to do with this thing, right? Now I'm freaked out because I knew that, okay, they let me go, but I got the distinct impression that, man, they thought I had something to do with this, and this was not going to be the last time that they talked to me about this. And I'm going to tell you, I was going to be straight up, I was scared.
Like anyone, Tyrone was terrified after being accused of murder by the police, but he wasn't afraid of the cameras. If anything, the cameras could only help him, because according to Tyrone, he was completely innocent.
So now I got to walk all the way home. I probably got there like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. It was early in the morning. But anyway, in my mind at that point, I mean, everything was telling me, man, it's like, you need to get out of here. I mean, these people, man, they think you had something to do with this. And but then, you know, the other side of me is going, if I take off, they're going to think I did it, you know? So I eventually end up down at McDonald's, right? I went to McDonald's because they have free Wi-Fi there, so I could get on my laptop, because I always had a laptop in my backpack. I really wasn't sure on what I was doing at that point. I didn't know. But that's when Paula shows up.
Paula and Tyrone ended up running into each other at a McDonald's, where they discussed the events of the robbery.
And Paula, you know, we weren't friends, but we knew each other. It's like, it's one of those things, a small island, and we know who lives in the neighborhood. We know who lives on the island. You run into each other, hey, you know, how you doing? How's it going? You know, that kind of thing. But I don't know that much about her. So anyway, so I run into Paula, and I remember, because I was feeling so bad and so sorry for myself for being interrogated for this thing all night, and I'm scared, and I'm feeling sorry for myself, I guess. And I remember seeing Paula, and she had a bandage on her neck from the night.
As soon as Tyrone saw her, she broke down as they discussed the way the attack had unfolded.
And all of a sudden, I felt really bad, right? Because I was like, here I am feeling sorry for myself, and then I see her. She's bruised up and she has the thing on her neck. And then I saw and heard from her experience. And I told her what happened to me. I told her that they took me down to the station. I told her, you know, what happened. I felt horrible. It's like, again, here I am feeling bad because they grilled me all night. I guess it's somebody always has something worse. It definitely put me in a different mindset to see her.
At the time of this chance encounter, Paula didn't know yet that the police suspected Tyrone of being the second masked man at the treehouse, the one Paula had seen stab Matthew Bonnet. Neither knew at the time, but this chance encounter would later become a crucial piece of evidence in the prosecution's case against Tyrone. During their conversation, he mentioned something the detectives had only told him, that they'd found the bloody murder weapon. He told Paula it had Matthew's blood on it. Later that night, Tyrone was arrested and taken to jail.
And they put me in the black and white stripes, and then they put me in chains head to toe, and they take me right to solitary. Now, I've been to jail before, never for anything close to this. I've never had an experience like it, you know, ever. They take me there, they put me in solitary, and my mind is spinning. I can't even explain to you guys what it's like. I just didn't know. I was a normal guy a second ago, and now I'm sitting in a jail cell, and I'm, you know, being put in chains, and man, everybody's, you know, people are calling me I'm a murderer.
Sitting in solitary, Tyrone had plenty of time to think about how he'd ended up there. How had it all gone so wrong?
I had been in Key West for, I don't know, a while, probably a couple of years. I've been working on boats. I got myself a boat. Actually, I had 3 at one point. The idea was to, sail the Caribbean, you know, eventually island hop my way down to Venezuela and then go to, you know, South America, go up the mouth of the Amazon. Didn't happen.
In September 2017, Key West was struck by Hurricane Irma, causing significant damage and displacing many residents.
Thing is, I didn't evacuate when that happened. I was working, doing hurricane cleanup. They had people who wanted their roofs blue tarped, and They were paying me $300 an hour to get up there. And I also did a hurricane, like a debris, getting rid of debris and chopping up logs or whatever, trees that have fallen. Like many people at that time, a lot of us, if you want to say homeless, I guess that is the word. But the thing is a lot of people were homeless at that point. A lot of people lost their boats. A lot of people lost their houses, lost their homes. I wasn't exactly special that way. But I was working the whole time and, you know, I was making good money. And my whole plan was to buy another boat and, you know, again, resume my plan to sail off into the Caribbean.
Determined to save money as quickly as possible, Tyrone often stayed in homeless shelters. Eventually, he found his way to the warehouse where Rory Wilson and Travis Johnson lived.
It was okay. I don't necessarily like staying there, but I mean, I was saving up money. That's basically it, saving up money, getting a new boat.
Tyrone was known in the warehouse as one who mostly kept to himself, often alone in his room, watching movies on his laptop. But occasionally, he partied with Rory, Travis, and other occupants of the building. And according to him, that's what he was doing on the afternoon of November 17th.
I remember that day I was drinking Fireball with Travis. So I know I'd been drinking that day. And I know I went into the bedroom, so I remember that. And I don't remember much else about the day, except I do remember at one point, it's got to be later on in the evening, and I wake up and I'm out of cigarettes. And Travis is actually there. So I go and I walk to Tom Thumb, and I go over there to get cigarettes, and I come back. When we were up at Tom Thumb, I remember looking, and I could see the cop lights up there, right? I could see a bunch of cop lights up there. And I remember saying to Travis, I was like, man, I wonder what happened up there. I'm not in dark clothing. I am in shorts. I am wearing sandals. I am wearing, you know, normal people clothes. So it's not a very far walk from Tom Thumb to the warehouse. But by the time we got back there, there were cop cars everywhere. Anyway, so we go upstairs, and when I saw all that stuff out the window, you gotta remember, I'm still a little bit lit. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going back to bed, you know, because I was like, you know, I'm still not good, right? So I went back in and I passed out and in the bed.
Tyrone spent the first week in jail trying to piece together why the police were so sure he'd been involved in the Treehouse murder. He knew he couldn't afford a lawyer, and the prospect of defending himself against murder charges seemed impossible.
I still didn't have a lawyer. I was still in solitary. I still don't know why I'm there. You know, I have no idea why I'm there, really. I mean, I know what they're saying.
But then, Tyrone received an unexpected message.
I've known her since we were kids, but she was the first person to contact me when I got there. And I think it was like day 7.
I've always dressed functionally, mostly dark colors, lots of room. If it looked like it could survive a camping trip or hide a sandwich, I wore it. Well, after I lost some weight this year, my wardrobe swung from comfortable to I looked like when I was a kid wearing my dad's clothes. You remember when we were kids, maybe in grade 1 or 2, and we had to bring in one of our parents' t-shirts to wear when we were painting? Yeah, something like that. So I decided to order a few things off Quinn's, starting with their Italian board shorts. And here's what shocked me. They actually fit quite nicely. Not in a, this is snug, I'll break them in kind of way. Just normal. And here's the other thing. When Beck saw me wearing them, she actually said, "You look like an adult," which in her version is a compliment. Then I picked up one of Quince's linen shirts, and I was surprised how breathable and flattering it was. And here's the best part. Quince makes everything with high-end fabrics, uses ethical factories, and still charges 50 to 80% less than those fancy brands with names you can't pronounce. So if you're tired of looking at your wardrobe you should have retired last year, this might be your moment. Elevate your closet with Quince today. Just go to quince.com/madness for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/madness to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/madness. The woman who reached out to him was 45-year-old Lauren Genai, an old classmate from high school in Philadelphia.
And I was surprised. I was really surprised because we hadn't seen each other in 33 years.
After having a crush on each other in high school, Lauren and Tyrone's lives went in different directions after graduation. Tyrone went to college and studied finance, while Lauren moved west to California. It was in California that Lauren became a legend in the fitness industry when she co-founded CrossFit with her husband. After selling her shares in the company as part of a divorce settlement in 2012, Lauren became a multi-millionaire. And now, out of the blue, Tyrone's knight in shining armor was reaching out to him in jail. Lauren spoke with Court TV about reconnecting with Tyrone.
While he was in jail, you know, our friendship rekindled initially, and then we definitely bonded over what was going on with this case. You know, he and I started bonding over that, and then, you know, we had a thing for each other as kids, you know, and so that kind of rekindled. And he's a smart man, and he's very charismatic, and I know a lot of people like him, and he's got some quirkinesses about him, but I do too, and those quirkinesses, I guess, just matched, and, you know, there were fireworks. I mean, it honestly sounds outrageous, but, you know, he and I did talk a lot on the phone over 2 years.
Not long after reconnecting, Tyrone asked Lauren if she could look into his case.
And he basically told me in the beginning, he's like, I don't expect you to just blindly believe me. Look at what's there, and then you tell me what you think. And he allowed me to have access to all the discovery, all the information that was provided by the prosecution. Look at the evidence. And then as I did, I mean, it was so blatantly obvious that something was horribly wrong with this case.
According to Page Six, Lauren then hired a private investigator to review the case. And when she became convinced of Tyrone's innocence, she hired high-powered attorneys to begin dismantling the prosecution's case against him. And like a chain of dominoes, the evidence against Tyrone began toppling over one by one. The first domino to fall was the eyewitness testimony of Paula Belmont. Once she learned that Tyrone was being accused of murdering Matthew, she told police she didn't think it was him. According to Paula, she was convinced she would have been able to tell if it was Tyrone's voice during the attack, and according to her, it wasn't. Police, though, persisted, continuing to tell her they thought she was misremembering the attack. Apparently, police brushed her aside each time she broached the subject, in complete contradiction to how police tend to treat eyewitness accounts. But Paula's story wasn't the only evidence that didn't fit the prosecution's theory of the crime. The DNA tests would deliver another blow to the prosecution's case. When analysts examined the bloody dive knife believed to be the murder weapon, they found genetic material from both victims, Matthew and Paula, as well as DNA from Rory Wilson on the handle. The Halloween mask discovered at the crime scene told a similar story. The victim's DNA on the exterior and Rory's DNA on the interior. But here's what the analyst from the lab had to say about Tyrone's DNA.
So for the DNA results that I obtained, there was no samples that he was included as a possible contributor.
Tyrone's DNA wasn't found on a single piece of evidence collected at the crime scene. According to Key West, the newspaper, when Assistant State Prosecutor Colleen Dunn read the DNA results, she sent a text message to Captain Penny Phelps of the Monroe County Sheriff's Office, calling the report, quote, crappy. The state's case against Tyrone continued unraveling piece by piece. A jailhouse informant claimed Tyrone confessed to the crime while incarcerated. During a bond hearing, the assistant prosecutor assured the court that the informant had no incentive not to be credible. Yet, just 2 weeks later, the informant was released from jail, and Tyrone's bail was denied. It soon emerged that the informant was a longtime confidential source for the sheriff's office, a fact not disclosed to the court. Over the years, he'd assisted in up to 40 cases. This hidden history ensured the tainted jailhouse confession would never reach trial. Throughout 2019, Tyrone's legal team worked to get him released on bond, something prosecutors were staunchly opposed to. Meanwhile, the long-distance couple made plans to get married inside the jail where Tyrone was being held. But just before the big day, they received some unexpected news. The judge agreed to release Tyrone on a $2 million bond. Inside Edition covered the sensational aspect of the case in November 2019.
This may be the most bizarre love story you've ever seen. It's the first time these lovers have held each other for 30 years.
Oh, baby.
Her name is Lauren Janai, a mother of four, and the multi-million dollar co-founder of the popular CrossFit gym empire. And her Prince Charming, Ty Tucker, an accused killer facing trial for first-degree murder. Inside Edition cameras were rolling as Lauren came to his rescue this week. She marched into a Florida court with her four children to put a chunk of her fortune on the line, posting $2 million bail.
I'm on board.
And we were there when they were able to kiss for the first time.
Mm.
Lauren, who lives in Oregon, is renting a $3 million home in Key West because Ty can't leave Florida. He's under house arrest and can't use the pool because of that ankle bracelet. They're also planning a wedding.
Although Lauren and Tyrone officially tied the knot in the summer of 2020, it would take another 4 years before Tyrone's case saw the inside of a courtroom. And his legal battle was far from over. Meanwhile, major shakeups were happening within the ranks of law enforcement and the state attorney's office. In 2020, Assistant State Attorney Colleen Dunn was suspended after the Florida Supreme Court determined she'd withheld crucial evidence in a previous murder case back in 2009. Captain Penny Phelps also met a similar fate. She too was removed from the Treehouse investigation due to allegations of misconduct. During a 2021 deposition, lead detective Matthew Pitcher stated, he believed Captain Phelps had improperly coached and directed the confessions of both Rory Wilson and Travis Johnson. But state prosecutors had another card up their sleeve they decided to play. In 2022, they offered Travis Johnson a sweetheart plea agreement. In exchange for agreeing to testify against Rory and Tyrone, they would drop the murder charge against him. Travis pleaded guilty to aggravated robbery and was released from jail, having served a total of 56 months behind bars. In December 2022, Rory Wilson was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life without parole. The case against Rory was solid. Prosecutors had Paula's eyewitness identification of him, as well as his DNA on the mask and murder weapon. But Tyrone's case was different. Having no physical evidence tying him to the crime scene, the state was left to rely almost entirely on the confession of the self-admitted getaway driver, Travis Johnson. And as it turned out, there were a lot of problems with Travis's story. Let's start by examining Travis's version of events. The story he confessed to during interrogation and the one he would later testify to at trial.
I went back to the warehouse. Tucker was there. Wilson was not. I don't know what time it was, but it wasn't dark yet. And Wilson shows back up rather excited because he had just heard that somebody at Burger King had just told him that somebody had a large amount of money and cocaine and told him where it was and that he wanted to go get it. Wilson wanted to go get this lick because he had a baby on the way and he needed the money to pay his cell phone bill. He wasn't really saying much. He just was adamant that we go do this. They were just going to go inside and take the money from this woman and the crack and come back. I proceeded to drive over to the treehouse. I stopped in front of the gate. Wilson and Tucker exited my vehicle. I pulled forward about another 50 meters from the gate and stopped at a stop sign. I don't know exactly how long. It didn't seem like very long. Maybe 5 minutes, maybe less. And somebody comes running out of the gate with a flashlight, screaming, "Help, help, help, call police." At this point, I'm thinking, I'm out of here. I'm not dealing with this. And before I could pull away, I look in my rearview mirror again, and I see Tucker exiting the gate and running after my truck.
At first, his story appears to be incredibly damning to Tyrone. But a closer inspection reveals that almost every detail of his story, even including the idea that Travis was merely the getaway driver, was spoken by Captain Phelps before any confession whatsoever.
What I need you to talk to us about, Travis, is you got to give us your side of the story. You got to let us know, because I believe in my heart and soul, you're one of the good guys on the good side of the story. You're not a violent guy. You're a good person that got just all jammed in a really bad thing. And the really sad thing is, Travis, you weren't even up in there. You drove him. We got you on camera. A little bit after 8 o'clock, you come back. And you park your truck right in front of that camera at the gate. And they get out. Ty gets out. Detroit gets out. And then you do the smartest thing in your life. You don't get out of the truck. You get out of there. You get out of there. And then everything goes to shit. And now here you sit, good guy, stuck up in this bad stuff, trying to live past what the heck happened and trying to deal with it every day. I'm telling you, you are going to be safe. But in order to make that happen, I got to know what happened. I got to make sure, Travis, you're a good guy.
You just said it.
You tell me it. Don't leave anything out, Travis, from the start.
Okay.
Summer is just around the corner, and the folks at Mint Mobile have a hot take. Getting a summer bod is out, and getting your savings bod is in. This spring and summer, we want skimpy wireless bills and fat wallets. And with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month, you can have both without breaking a sweat or the bank. I've got so many friends that switch to Mint Mobile, and are they ever happy they left the big three? They constantly rave about the great reception and how much money they're saving. It's time to get rid of your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered over the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get your summer savings and shop premium wireless plans at mintmobile.com/madness. That's mintmobile.com/madness. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. If you didn't catch it, after Captain Phelps tells Travis what she believes happened, Travis responds, "You just told me. You just said it." But there was one significant discrepancy between what Travis had confessed to and what Travis would later testify to. And it had to do with Paula's black backpack. Here's that part of the confession.
"When you saw Ty running towards where you were parked, did you see anything in his hand?" "So he's just running."
Initially, Travis claimed Tyrone's hands were empty when he ran out of the treehouse. But at trial, his story changed.
As he's fumbling around on the ground, dropping stuff, trying to stuff it back into a black bag that I could see he's got in his hand. And I round the corner and I take off back to the warehouse.
Paula's backpack was also the source of another incredibly inconvenient fact for the prosecution. Initially, investigators had been unable to locate it. In the days after the murder, Travis had fled the warehouse and had taken up residence in a home that was still under construction. This is where police located him on the day of his arrest. 2 weeks later, the homeowner informed police that a black backpack had been found inside the home, hidden inside a closet beneath an air conditioning unit. Inside the bag was Paula Belmont's EBT card. But Travis maintains he had no idea how the bag came into his possession.
I opened my footlocker, and right there on the top of it was the black backpack, the bag that Tucker had emptied onto the table in the dining room the night of the incident. What the fuck? Why is this in my bag? Why is this in my box? I panicked and I grabbed it and I looked for the closest thing near me, which was a closet, an air conditioner closet, opened the door and I threw it in, shut the door behind it.
By the time Tyrone's murder trial began in January 2024, his case had already received significant press over the years from tabloids and gossip columns. Most of the attention had been centered around the sensational story of a millionaire marrying an accused murderer. But incredibly, this would no longer be the most shocking part of his story. Tyrone announced his decision to represent himself at trial. It seemed ludicrous. Here was a man whose only experience with law was what he picked up since he'd been arrested. Not only that, he now had the financial resources to hire some of the best defense attorneys in the country. So why had he decided to defend himself? According to Tyrone, it came down to one reason. Because he knew it would attract the media. In a series of comments on Reddit, Tyrone explained that he believed the presence of cameras in the courtroom would, quote, keep the judge and prosecution more honest. The fact that I'm not an attorney meant that I could call them out on their BS, and I don't have to worry or care about my career. As opening arguments began, all eyes were on Tyrone, who appeared confident as he addressed the jury.
Nothing in that story tells you what evidence they have, what evidence they're going to show. Now, how are they going to actually tie me into that story? You know, prosecution, you know, tells that story, but the problem is very little of that story is true. That's the bottom line. The only thing that was true on that story is, yes, John Travis Johnson was there. That's a fact. They keep on saying he's the getaway driver, right? Out of all the evidence...
I'm going to sustain the objection. This is an opportunity to talk about what the evidence you expect will show.
That's where I'm going, Your Honor.
Okay.
Just give me a second, I'll get right there. I was actually just getting to that point. Out of all the evidence they show, all the witnesses they bring, where are they going to show he's the getaway driver?
Despite the frequent objections and sidebars, Tyrone pressed on, including a scathing internal affairs investigation into the Monroe County Sheriff's Office.
Mr. Tom Walker goes ahead and investigates the investigation because of a complaint I made. A complaint that comes back sustained. Comes back as sustained for an investigation that was so poor, so poorly executed. 208 pieces of evidence were found to be mishandled by the MCSO, including DNA, including physical evidence, including video. 208 pieces of evidence.
After casting shadow on the entire investigation, Tyrone emphasized the key components to his defense. There was no video evidence. There was no forensic evidence, and the only eyewitness who would implicate him was an alleged co-conspirator who'd received a sweetheart plea agreement to testify against him. But most convincing of all was that Paula Belmont would testify for the defense.
The evidence we intend to put on, we're going to put on the surviving victim, Miss Paula Belmont, who says 100% sure wasn't me that night. 100%. This is a woman who was brutally beaten, robbed, had her throat slit, you know, literally sat there and watched her friend get murdered viciously. But yet she is testifying on my side.
Although Tyrone attempted to call Paula to the stand, she was unable to because she was in the hospital at the time, suffering from emphysema and COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Instead, a taped deposition of Paula's testimony was played for the jury. In the deposition, Paula was adamant that Tyrone was not the second attacker. The prosecution's case was notable for the absence of two key figures, Captain Penny Phelps and lead detective Matthew Pitcher, raising questions about the investigator's integrity. Their star witness, Travis Johnson, appeared sincere and forthcoming during direct examination. But under Tyrone's cross-examination, his demeanor shifted, becoming defensive and combative.
Did you come up with this story on your own?
My story is the way that I told it. The narrative that was recited by Officer Penny Phelps, who I'm sure you're referring to, she's a good detective. She may have done things wrong, but she figured this out. And I was caught, and I admitted to it. She had laid out the entire narrative to me, and I agreed with her because she was right.
Okay. That wasn't what I asked you.
But this is exactly
I asked
what
you,
was asked.
Excuse me. I asked you, did somebody else come up with your story?
No, she did not come up with my story. She understood the case and understood the nature of what had happened and explained it very clearly what she understood, and she hit it right on the head. And I told her in my own words what she had basically just narrated to me, because it was the truth.
Okay.
She did not tell me my story.
With the next question on cross, Tyrone effectively scored his biggest point in front of the jury.
Okay, so did you offer any parts of that story prior to her giving it to you?
I did not.
Tyrone then asked for permission to enter Travis's original confession into evidence, a request that clearly shocked the judge.
And so you want, I mean, just want to understand this, you want a law enforcement officer to recite their theory of your guilt, and you want to, I mean, to me, most people would want to keep that out of evidence, but you want it in evidence, a recitation of the law enforcement's theory of your guilt. Just so I'm clear, but if you want to play this, I just find it an interesting strategy, but if you want to play it, go ahead.
The video demonstrated to the jury that almost everything in Travis's story had been previously told to him by Captain Phelps. He also pointed out that just before Travis began his confession, he made a very interesting comment.
I don't know how to explain this. I don't know what to say, Ken.
I know. Travis, the thing to say is the truth, and that's what you're doing, and that's the best thing you can do.
I'll do whatever you guys want me to do.
Travis, did you just tell her you will do anything they want you to do?
So, at this point, I would cooperate with them, 100%, yes.
Said specifically that...
Okay, what are you implying by me saying that? I said I would cooperate with them. Is there a misconstruement of what that meant to you or to me?
Mr. John, he just asked a simple question.
And I answered it. I will comply. That's what that meant.
Although Tyrone scored some points with the jury during his cross-examination, he certainly didn't score any with the judge when he showed up late for his own trial on multiple days.
For about the sixth time, we've sat here waiting for you, and it now is interfering with the orderly process of this trial. I have been more than indulgent with every step of the way in your plodding along and showing up late and your cavalier attitude. Be warned, next time I will grant the stage motion for Capius, and we won't have this problem anymore. So there's nothing need to be said other than if you need to leave earlier, whatever you need to do, be on time.
By the end of the prosecution's case, they'd only presented two pieces of evidence against Tyrone: Travis's testimony and a grainy surveillance video, which they claimed showed Travis dropping off Rory and Tyrone near the treehouse. The figures in the video were hardly more than shadows, and the jury would have to trust Travis's testimony if they were to believe one of those figures was Tyrone. During closing arguments, the prosecution implored the jury to believe Travis.
The devil really is in the detail in this case. I submit to you that the most credible evidence that you received was the testimony of John Travis Johnson. That is going to be the most credible evidence that you received in this case. And I believe you will come to that determination because of the detail that is involved in that testimony. He gives you great detail about how the plan was hatched. They did a drive-by earlier just to kind of case the joint out. Travis said he was in the front seat. He saw them go in that gate. A few minutes later, he sees somebody coming running from the gate. What do we see on the video? Corroboration. Sure enough, we see a guy in dark clothing come running from the direction of the treehouse towards the direction where the truck had dropped him off. Consistent with what Travis said happened that night, that he saw Tucker coming out of the treehouse with this bag in his hand, and he gives his statement back in November of 2017, and he's arrested. And that statement has remained unimpeached to this day.
The prosecution also made a shocking accusation when it was implied that Tyrone had used his wife's fortune to buy off his best witness, Paula Belmont.
Paula went from living homelessly, living in a flop house for homeless people with no water and no electric, to posting pictures of her trip to California. And then she appears for her testimony and says, it's not the defendant. It's not Tucker. Tucker wasn't the second guy. I can't say who it was, but it wasn't him. I submit you should take that testimony very cautiously, and you should reject it because it's simply not truthful. It has been tainted.
The only support for this stunning allegation ever entered into evidence was a picture from Paula's Facebook page of a single trip she'd taken to California. With freedom or life in prison hanging in the balance, Tyrone Tucker delivered an impassioned closing argument.
All those details that he just handed out to you, the I said this, I did that, you know, all this stuff. Yeah, somebody was there who did the crime could actually tell you all those things. Makes sense. After 6 years, the state comes up here with Travis said. That's why I'm here. That's what it boils down to. Can you see anybody in the truck? Can you see anybody, a getaway driver, sitting in the truck? No. You can't see anybody sitting in the truck. Do you see two people getting out of where the truck was? Sure. But what's to say that wasn't Travis? How's that end up being me? That prosecutor never says, not once does he say how that becomes me. You can't prove I was there. You can't prove that I actually committed any crime, that I actually did anything, that I even discussed a crime with them. He can't even prove that. He can't prove one element of his case, not one. Right? So there's no physical evidence putting me there. There is no video evidence putting me there. There is no forensics evidence putting me there. Nothing puts me there committing this crime.
Tyrone then focused on the credibility of Travis's story.
Where that whole getaway driver story came from. She literally tells him the entire story. He parrots it back. All he says is, yeah, that's what happened. Now the details after that, of course he knows the details. He was there. He could tell you all that stuff. Why? He's there. That's simple. Nothing that says I was there. It just says he was there. Okay, yes, Travis drove the truck there. I believe that all day. But I also believe Travis and Rory got out of that truck. And I believe Travis went and committed this crime. This man is getting off a life sentence. He's getting out of his part of this crime by saying that I did this. That's what it boils down to. He's trading my life for his. And yeah, you know, he got a hell of a deal, 5 years. That's what he got, the time he didn't jail. And all he has to do is testify against me.
Tyrone also addressed the credibility of Paula's testimony that Travis was the man who'd killed Matthew Bonnet
Matt was her friend, too. Now, I'm not her only friend. Matt was her friend for a very long time. And if she thought I had anything to do with it, she did testify to this. I could burn in hell like the other two. Do you really think she would be doing that if she thought I had something to do with this?
In the rebuttal, prosecutors saved what they considered their smoking gun, Tyrone's conversation with Paula at the McDonald's the day after police interrogated him.
I'm here to submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, the most damaging piece of evidence in this case is the conversation that Paula Belmonte testified to, and that is the conversation that she had with this defendant at the McDonald's the day after he was interviewed by the sheriff's department. Runs into Paula. He went there, remember, to use the Wi-Fi. He runs into Paula, and they start talking about the crime. Paula tells him what's happening, and he's feeling really, really bad for her. But he informs her, the sheriff's department found the knife, or they found the knife, and she was really happy to hear that. And she said, oh my God, that's great. It has my blood on it. What does this defendant tell Paula Belmont? No, it had Matt Rebonnet's blood on it. We know the Monroe County Sheriff's Office didn't provide that information. We know for a fact that it was proven on this defendant's examination of Angela Oslowski that the DNA results on the knife did not come back until months after that meeting in McDonald's.
Essentially, the prosecution was asking, how could Tyrone have known that Matthew's blood was on the knife? Unless, of course, he had firsthand knowledge of the crime. But let's go back and listen to Tyrone's initial interrogation and hear precisely what detectives told him about the knife just before he ran into Paula the next day.
The first call comes into 911 telling our dispatchers that a guy has been stabbed, he's dead, and he's laying face down in a pool of blood. We found a knife.
Okay.
On that knife is blood, and on the handle of that blood, latent DNA. And we have wounds on our victim that are consistent with the knife that was found in lot 72.
By the time Captain Phelps made these statements to Tucker, Matthew Bonnet had already been identified as the victim. In her interrogation, she explicitly told Tyrone about finding the bloody knife used in the stabbing, when emphasizing it was covered in DNA evidence. This crucial context never made it to the jury. The interrogation video never entered into evidence, because the prosecution raised this point only in their rebuttal. Tucker never had a chance to explain how he knew about the knife. What the prosecution presented as definitive proof of guilt had a much simpler explanation. One, the jury would never hear. With final arguments complete, the fate of Tyrone Tucker now rested in the jury's hands. Several hours after beginning deliberations, the jury sent the judge a note.
It says, Judge Jones, we have come to the unfortunate conclusion that we are a hung jury and need guidance on how to proceed. Thank you. Signed, your foreperson.
The judge then gave the jury an Allen charge, an instruction given to deadlocked juries, encouraging them to reach a unanimous verdict. But not long after, the jury again returned with a note.
I got a note from our foreperson. Judge Jones, we cannot come to a unanimous decision as to a verdict. Thank you, foreperson. So that's pretty much it.
With the jury unable to reach a verdict, a mistrial was declared. According to Tyrone, the jury was hung 9-3 in favor of guilt. But according to a juror interviewed by Keyes Weekly, there'd been only a single holdout unwilling to find Tyrone guilty. As the saying goes from the film 12 Angry Men, it takes only one to hang a jury. But the prosecution vowed to retry the case again as soon as possible. Tyrone was still not a free man. In November 2024, just before Thanksgiving, state prosecutors made a stunning decision, making Tyrone an offer he couldn't refuse. Tyrone pleaded no contest to a single charge of robbery with a deadly weapon. And with credit for time already served, the agreement meant Tyrone was now a completely free man for the first time in 7 years. Ultimately, the Treehouse murder wasn't just a story of legal twists and controversial outcomes. It was the tragic tale of Matthew Bonnet, an eccentric and kind street performer who offered shelter to the most vulnerable. His kindness became his vulnerability, and his attempt to rescue Paula Belmont that night became his final act. For Paula, seeking justice for her friend Matthew had been a cause worth fighting for until her final breath. She spent years fighting to be heard by the justice system that seemed determined to ignore her voice. Despite having her throat slashed and watching her friend die, she never wavered from her belief in Tyrone's innocence. Sadly, just weeks after Tyrone's mistrial, Paula passed away from complications of COPD. She never got to see Tyrone officially set free. Ultimately, it took two different types of Cinderella stories to challenge the official narrative of what happened at the treehouse. A fairy tale romance and an underdog defending himself at trial. But perhaps the most telling lesson from this story isn't about love or justice at all. It's about who gets hurt in our justice system and who gets ignored. Because without this incredibly unlikely series of events, the truth that Paula fought so hard to tell would never have been heard at all. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.